Carman was a prolific singer-songwriter and the originator of power pop music. He would go on to have a successful career both as frontman and lead singer of the Raspberries and as a solo artist, leaving in his wake a large canon of work with indelible hits like Go All the Way and All by Myself. Last year at age 74, he passed away in his sleep. While the cause of death was not released, one thing is certain: his music will live on. In September, Play On, a Raspberries tribute, was released with artists such as Rick Springfield, The Lemon Twigs, and Foreigner's Lou Gramm covering some 37 of the group's tracks. And 50 years to the month it was released in 1975, a tribute concert, EC50, is being planned in Carman's hometown to commemorate the release of the self-titled album and his musical legacy. Eric Carman is from Ohio. First off, I caught up with Stephen Neal, who played on Eric Carman and was on tour with him following the album's release. As co-producer, he was furiously preparing for the upcoming tribute concert, EC50, honoring Carman's musical legacy. Well, first of all, Stephen Neal, welcome to From Ohio.
Well, thank you, because that's where I'm from.
I know. Now, listen, let's start with, you know, I was doing all this research on getting ready for this episode, and I thought to myself, we could do a whole episode on you. I mean, before we get to the part about Eric Carman, let's talk about you real quick. You went to Lakewood High School, graduated in 1972, started playing bass when you were like 15, and then started kicking around the Cleveland music scene. So I'd like to get a little bird's eye view onto what those early days were like for you, kicking around the Cleveland music scene in the early 70s, late 60s?
Well, the most important thing, I think, is that in those days, there were a million guitar players and no bass player, and I actually had a jam session on my mother's back screen porch, and where we had two drummers, five guitar players, a keyboard player, and no bass players. And the next day I went and bought a bass because I figured there's no competition.
Well, now, speaking of playing, you ended up playing on Eric Carman's first solo album. Now, you were in a band called Magic, which is from Cleveland. And my understanding is that you opened for the Raspberries, that Magic did. And then I guess after the show, you were practicing harmonies, Beach Boy harmonies, and Eric went back and brought Jimmy Einer, who's the producer of the solo album, and heard you and later asked you to play on the album. Is that, how'd that all work out?
Well, there's a lot longer of a timeline. I think it was the end of 1973 we opened for the Raspberries, a version of the band, not the one that ended up being on the album. We actually only had four people and a different drummer. 1973 we opened for the Raspberries at the Agora in downtown Cleveland, where we were playing every Wednesday, big club, 1,000 people or better. And we opened for the Raspberries that night, and it was just the Raspberries. Jimmy and nobody else was there, but Eric walked back while we were rehearsing before we started, and we were rehearsing the Beach Boys' Little Saint Nick. And he just stood there and didn't say anything, and then he walked into the other part of the dressing room, and that was it. And, you know, we had always gone to see the Raspberries. They were what we used to call a generation ahead of us. So actually, Eric approached us about being in the band before he had a record deal. The Raspberries just sort of stalled, and unfortunately, because they were a great band, they were stalled after Rolling Stone named their last album one of the seven records of the year. So, and then they stalled because they just didn't have the support of the label and or whatever. But so he came and he and Mike McBride, who was his drummer in the Raspberries, started coming to see us play at the Agora, and we would have Mike come up and sing like Rolling Stone songs with us. Then Eric started coming, and so we'd have them both come up, and it was just fun, and we didn't really think about it. And then he kind of pulled us aside and said, look, I'm breaking up the band. Mike knows. I want you guys to be my backing band. I'm going to bring Mike along because the Beach Boys have two drummers, so I want to have two drummers too. So that was it. We knew about it. And then he brought his manager down to see us. His manager got the idea. And then the big test was Jimmy was going to come. And Jimmy came in January, I think, of 75. Jimmy came. And
we were all really nervous. To Cleveland.
Yeah, to the Agora. And Jimmy, we were all really nervous because Eric said Jimmy wanted to use studio guys, and Eric did not want to. Eric really wanted to have a band, but he wanted to have a band where he had the final say. So it was what do they call that in England, like a representative monarchy or something like that. And we were fine with that because we were young kids. We really didn't have studio experience. We looked up to him as our local Cleveland star, And, you know, we were just flabbergasted that he wanted us. So we passed the audition, as John Lennon said, you know, and we went to make the record. But Jimmy was, you know, being the cautious one, had studio guys at the ready in case we didn't cut it. And there was one or two times in the studio, or very early on, Jimmy made us very, very nervous, and or we made ourselves nervous. And at one point, I thought we were going to get fired. So Rich Rising, who was a sort of our musical director and the leader of Magic, grabbed all of us guys together, and he said, look, either we're going to make it or we're not, but let's go out with a bang. So the next morning, we went into the studio before session, and we just played Who songs for an hour. So we got all this aggression out, and then we did our session that day, and at the end of it, Jimmy said, come in here into the studio. And we were only allowed to go, this control room, we were only allowed to go in when we were asked, you know. So we went in, and he said, what happened? And we were like, okay, this is it, we're dead. And he said, no, this is a band I thought I had all along. I don't know what you guys just did, but you just proved that you're the band that should be on this record.
Wow.
After that, everything was fine.
Yeah.
I think we just had to get off of our, you know, our inexperience level and stop letting them get to us. Because Jimmy is a taskmaster, and that's how he gets stuff done. He's very good at it.
Yeah.
That was it. So Eric and Jimmy got along really great on this album. You know, they worked together. I mean, there's a guy named Charlie Colella who's actually coming to conduct for our show. He's 86.
Oh.
He did all the arrangements for the Raspberries albums, for Eric's first one. And we like to say by osmosis for all of other Eric's albums that don't have a listed arranger, because that's mostly where Eric learned arranging was from Charlie.
Okay. Yeah.
So Charlie was there, and it was really just us and Charlie later, and the only outside musician was a guy named Hugh McCracken, who played for Paul McCartney's Wings, and he came in and did the slide solo and all by myself. But it was us, and, you know, the basic tracks were Eric on piano, the two drummers, and me. And that was all the basic tracks were that way. And it was interesting playing with two drummers that played differently. And it kind of got to be, there was only a few songs where both of them played all the time. In All By Myself, Mike McBride played the kick, the snare, and the hi-hat, and Don Kruger played the drum, the tom-tom fills. So it was fascinating how it was all arranged.
Wow.
And, you know, then I think we had the guitars come in for some of it. And then we did vocals, which, you know, there were seven of us singing, including Eric.
Including,
and that's
you.
You picked us. Yeah, including me. Well, I was a seven singer in a seven singer band as far as quality. truly, I'm not the best singer, but we kind of arranged this to where, besides Eric, that two guys sang the top, because everything was kind of three-part harmony.
Right.
Two guys sang the top, Rich and I sang the middle, two other guys sang the bottom parts, and so the middle parts were the ones that didn't move quite as much, so
right.
They were great.
Yeah.
And Eric did this trick which the Beach Boys used, where everybody sang around, well, in this case, two microphones. And there are no individual microphones or anything except the lead vocals. But what you do is you set people up at different distances from the microphone. So if I was on one microphone, I would sing a version of the song, of maybe say really close, and then the next pass through on another track, I'd be the furthest guy back on the other track. So what we were getting was Beach Boys were just, Brian Wilson was just a genius. When you listen to their records closely, you hear the individual voices.
Tell us a little bit about some of the aspects of the show coming up. And one of the things that I realized is that Eric, who went to the Cleveland Institute of Music, had such a solid foundation in classical music. And there's so many references of classical music on his first solo album, right? That was a great way to honor him by doing this orchestrated concert at Lakewood High School. So tell us about the event on the 25th.
Well, we kind of decided Eric only got to play with an orchestra when he toured Japan in, I think, 1979 or 80, and at like award shows or a celebration of Eric's anniversary. So he never got to play with an orchestra. And he always had synthesizers, which in our day were really rudimentary compared to what you can do now. So we kind of thought, if we're going to do this show, let's do it how Eric would have done it had he been here and had pretty much unlimited resources to put on a show.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we did. And so from the very beginning, it was with an orchestra. And knowing that I went to that school, and the school has an unbelievable orchestra director who's been there 36 years. She's retiring this year. She was nominated for a Grammy. Her kids go to Belmont. They go to Berkeley. Her teachers are all from there. I mean, these kids are better players than us. their 13-year-old prodigy concert pianist is going to Carnegie Hall in December to play because he won a competition. I mean, they're that good.
Right.
And so we were stunned. We had no idea how great they were. And they're playing throughout the whole show, including their drummers, bass players, guitar players, and piano and keyboard players in some songs.
So in a way, you're sort of introducing a new group of people to Eric's. Like you were saying, Eric was a step ahead of you guys because he was a little bit older. And now you're reintroducing Eric's music to a whole new generation of people, I guess.
Well, absolutely, because most people under 60 don't know who Eric is.
Yeah.
And most people under 40 don't know who Celine Dion is, who covered All By Myself.
Right.
So we felt it was our obligation to try to share his music. And that's what the word legacy is all about. I mean, his records ended up on Sony's Legacy brand, which is where they either send artists to find new markets or to die.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim Smith, who is the head of A&R there, and I are good friends. And we kept talking about what can we do to... You know, Eric has some unbelievable songs that no one has ever heard or really never really listened to.
Yeah.
Eric was foremost a composer. He was a songwriter.
Absolutely.
That's his career. Yeah. And he used the piano, the guitar, his voice and choruses and everything else to basically tell stories. And, you know, he told some great, great stories. I mean, the love, lost love. I mean, they were deep and simple at the same time.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's how we did the show. I mean, the people that are playing are mostly people that we know from Cleveland who worked with him at one time or another. We have some special guests who are not saying who they are from other places. Sometimes we'll have 45 people on stage, and I have right now 12 different lead vocalists.
Whoa. All right.
Seven men and five women. Because, you know, Eric's solo stuff lends itself very well to women because it's in the black keys, meaning they're on flat keys.
Right.
So that's what we did. And so we have all these people working on it. And besides the playing, which I have to do, of course, you know, we have an online auction now of a bunch of great memorabilia. We're doing a video during the show. We've got, you know, pre-show VIP party for 100 people. We have all this stuff. We're treating this like this was a big Live Nation concert and a major act coming through. We have every piece of what they do just on an 1800-seat scale.
Wow. Hey, listen, for people that can't be there on the 25th, is there going to be some sort of recorded version of the show that they can catch? Will there be some live streaming? How could someone who, you know, won't be in Cleveland on the 25th or coming home for Thanksgiving see the show?
So we're recording it 48-track, 8 camera. And we plan to sell it to somebody.
Okay.
So what we're gonna do is after it's done, the guy who produced the Raspberries Pop Art Live album, Tommy Allen's gonna mix it in New York, and we have a video crew that's gonna you know, sync edit you know, visuals to that, and we'll see where it goes. But in the short term, our plan is to take 15-second clips of each song and post those,
okay,
so people can at least get
great
a taste, and also, you know, we're not allowing cameras or video in the room, so the orchestra kids' parents are going to be like, but I got to see my kids play. Well, no, they do, you know. I mean, and so we decided we're going to give them a taste of every song, and that hopefully that will satiate them until we get to wherever this ends.
Yeah.
So there's we're not just releasing it to YouTube. I mean,
okay,
we've spent too much time on this thing for it not to continue to support the orchestra. And, you know, and have its own life, you know, and we think there's enough there that will do that. We've already been talking to some people in the broadcast streaming media world who have interest because they know who this guy is. And there's really been no stories on Eric and the Raspberries. They haven't had their Netflix or Amazon documentary.
Right. I think it's due.
Well, and they're also due to get in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
Also, you know, I mean, all those people are coming with us, so...
All right.
You know, they're coming to the show. So we'll see. You never know.
Last question before we go. You know, one of the things that always impressed me about Eric Carmen was that he's from Cleveland, grew up in Lyndhurst, and all during his career, when he was like, you know, really making it, he, for the most part, always lived in Cleveland. I think he went out to L.A. for a little bit. And, of course, toward the end of his life, he was in Arizona. But I would say, from what my understanding is, maybe, you know, 80% of his adult life was spent in Cleveland. So I'm curious, what did Cleveland mean to Eric? And why did he feel like that's where he, you know, wanted to stay when he could have pretty much lived anywhere he wanted?
Well, I think Eric was a Cleveland guy. I mean, he grew up in Cleveland bands, and there was a scene in Cleveland that I would say rivaled any other live music scene in the country. It wasn't as much original music as some other ones, but bands were stars. They dressed like stars. They had road crews. I mean, this was like a mini real, label. We were label artists without our own music before, many other people. And I think he felt comfortable there. And I think LA, and it was for him, was a little foreign. Like, the people are different. And New York, I think he liked New York to go to, but it was just home. He had people around him that he knew, he trusted. And I think he brought us in as his band because he saw us and he knew we could recreate what he had in his head. We
Sure.
would support his vision. And
Great.
I think that was why he stayed there.
I was able to reconnect with Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee Lou Gramm, the original voice and founding member of Foreigner, who covered the track Tonight on the recently released Raspberries tribute album, Play On. So, Lou Gramm, the last time you and I saw each other was 36 years ago this fall.
Unbelievable.
We were on
I
a
don't
boat.
Think I was born then.
We were on a boat in New York Harbor, and we were, shooting scenes for the video Just Between You and Me. And,
oh my goodness!
Yeah, and I never got a chance to tell you this, but you'll get a kick out of this. So that song, as you know, went to number 3 on the top 40 in January of 1990. And Lou, it turned me into an MTV video star because that song was on heavy rotation, and I would walk down the streets of New York and I would see myself in the window of PC Richards, with like 15 television sets, and I'd be like, oh my God. And all my friends back in Ohio are saying, oh, you're on this Lou Gramm video and all this stuff. And you know what ended up happening was an art director or the director of a commercial saw that music video and tracked the girl and I down to be in a Toyota MR2 commercial.
And were you?
Yeah, we were in the commercial, and it ended
she dressed,
up...
She dressed the same?
Well, she dressed similarly. That was the thing. They loved that video. And for those of you who haven't seen the video, of course, you could Google it, but it's essentially a makeup breakup story about a boyfriend and a girlfriend. So there's only 3 people in the video, myself, Stephanie Norwood, and yours truly here, Lou Gramm. So anyway, Lou, a belated thank you for, first of all, it got me into not only my 15 minutes of fame, but it got me into the Screen Actors Guild. So I owe you for that and
wow.
For 35 years of hard union labor.
and you owe me for that too?
Yeah. Well, listen, I'll tell you what. If I owe you anything, if you're doing any more videos for the any upcoming Foreigner things, let me know. I'm available. But right now, what I want to talk to you about is, well, first of all, let me just say congratulations on being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last fall.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I thought it would never happen.
Well, tell me this. You were inducted in Cleveland, Ohio, which is the home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So did that have any...
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. Did that have any special meaning for you, being in Cleveland and being in the home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Well, I mean, if you're going to be inducted, that's where you want to be.
All right. Well, listen, speaking of Cleveland, the Raspberries were from Cleveland, Ohio.
Yes.
And,
yes,
you know
that.
Recently I saw the Bruce Springsteen biopic, right? And there's a scene in the movie where Bruce Springsteen gets in his car, he's driving around his hometown, and he's listening to Hot Blooded, Foreigner, on the radio.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Have you not seen the movie? You've got to see the movie. And by the way, Bruce Springsteen was a Raspberries fan.
Awesome.
Yeah. So at any rate, I'm just wondering if there was a movie about you and, the forming of Foreigner, and they did a scene like that, would there be a Raspberry song playing on your radio?
It could quite possibly be, yes.
Well, you covered the track Tonight on the Raspberries tribute album, Play On. And I'm just wondering, how did that come to be? How did you get involved in that project, and why did you pick that particular track?
Well, I got a call from I think it was the Raspberries manager, and then he put Eric on the line. Mm-hmm. He talked and told me he really liked the way I sang and et cetera, et cetera. And he thought my voice would work good on covering one of his songs, you know.
Oh, so this was right before Eric passed away.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay.
A matter of months, I think.
Wow.
And I don't know if he heard the final take on it or not.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah.
But when he asked me to do it tonight, I was thrilled.
As somebody that's in the, you know, the Songwriters Hall of Fame, I'm just wondering what sort of influence and impact did the Raspberries and Eric Carmen have on you as a songwriter and performer?
Well, I thought that they actually struck me as something similar in, although they were definitely their own band, but they struck me as with the same feeling that I had when I initially heard the Beatles. And I don't know if I could pay them a higher compliment than that.
That's absolutely, yeah, amazing. And do you feel like, first of all, do you think the Raspberries are worthy of being following you into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
They should.
Yeah.
I believe they should.
And was there anything that you particularly admired about Eric Carmen's songwriting? He was quite a prolific composer.
I think he was, yes. His words and his dynamics were just right on the money. And it wasn't complicated. It wasn't ethereal or anything. It was just right in your face, and it sounded great.
Mm. Now, around the time that the Raspberries were disbanding, Foreigner was coming together. The Raspberries basically broke up in 1974, maybe early 75. Foreigner starts 1976, and you guys are about to start your 50th anniversary. Now, it looks like I've caught up with you in a studio. So I'm wondering, first of all, what's going on? What are you recording down there in that studio? And what's in store for Foreigner's 50th anniversary?
Well, I think the current band is going to be doing a number of shows in honor of Foreigner 4. So I'm going to be part of them, and we're going to be doing the complete album in the same running order that it is on the record.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably do all the songs on the album, and we'll still have about a half an hour left. So then we're going to do some of our other hits from other albums to close the show off.
All right. Well, listen, before we go, I guess I just want to ask you, since we're talking about Eric Carmen and the Raspberries, did you have a favorite Raspberries song when you were sort of starting out in the music business, playing around? Well, you started in Rochester, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So around the time that you were starting, the Raspberries were kind of at their peak. So, like, when you turn on the radio, like, what song were you hoping to hear by the Raspberries or Eric Carmen?
Please Go All the Way. Please Go All the Way.
Oh, my God. Lou, is that not one of the most infectious hooks you've ever heard in rock and roll?
Yes, and the playing was excellent, and the tempo and the dynamics were beautiful, and I say this with all the respect and complimentariness that there could be, there were parts of that song that reminded me of the Beatles and used to make my hair stand up on the end.
You have a new album coming out in January, Ann?
Yes, and it's all original songs, some songs that were coming along really well from my earlier solo albums, but when it was time to turn the album into the record company, these songs weren't quite finished. So after all this time, I went back and listened to these songs, finished them, and now they're on my album.
Hey, the album's called Released. Very good. Well,
Released, yes.
Hey, and Lou, let me just say, like I said at the top of the show, if you're looking for talent for one of the music videos from your new album, I'm available. We could reunite.
We'll keep that in mind for sure, definitely. That would be awesome, wouldn't it?
All right, Lou, thanks again for taking time to talk to us.
My pleasure. Oh. See you again soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Thanks for listening. We'll aim to be back with another episode soon. But in the meantime, please take a minute to follow From Ohio wherever you get your podcasts. And you can also find us on Instagram @from_Ohio. See you soon.